to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Yes, indeed. Friday. Here we go again. Good morning, everybody. 8 minutes after 8 o'clock. And good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, John. Rain. That's the story.
So how are you going to stop it? I mean, you always take credit for, you know, doing the right thing.
This is part of the mayor's plan to eliminate the drought that some people had predicted for the coming summer. I'm filling the reservoirs, so it'll be in good shape. But
Preparation.
Yeah, but you think this is going to be a big deal. Now, as one of your most loyal listeners, Vito Tirso, the sanitation department spokesman, pointed out that this is the anniversary, and I know you're going to remember this, of the blizzard of 1888.
No, that was John I. Gambling, I think. He was broadcasting
that,
back
that
then.
That is true, and as I said in the car, and somebody in the car this morning said, I said, how'd the sanitation department do? And Stu said, not as well as they do now. And I said, well, we've got a better mayor. The mayor then was somebody named Harlan, he thinks, well, who knows. And somebody piped up and said, yeah, but the same sanitation commissioner.
Yeah, exactly, right. Right, John Doherty.
Anyways, they had 40 to 50 inches of snow between March 11th and 14th, and we have already had 53 inches, although we did have it over the whole summer.
Can you imagine trying to plow the streets with horses and plows?
It was a different world. Right. Actually, our concern is this weekend, and OEM, the Office of Emergency Management, has a flash flood emergency plan that's been activated. Sanitation department's paying special attention to cleaning litter from around catch basin covers, and DEP, Environmental Protection's unclogging catch basins that the scout teams of the sanitation department find. So, you know, we're trying to get prepared, and it's not supposed to be hurricane winds, but an awful lot of rain. So it is.
Yes, we're going to focus on. Yeah, 4 to 5 inches of rain. We have a guest here in the studio with us.
Tell you why we have a guest. Here's the hook. Saturday or Sunday morning at 2 a.m., what are you supposed to do?
Set your clocks ahead 1 hour.
Spring forward, fall back. What else should you do when you do that?
Well, I know the answer to that, but I'll leave it to you.
You should check your fire smoke detector and see carbon dioxide, monoxide.
Yeah, and we've got the new commissioner.
We brought a fire commissioner.
Yeah,
sure,
fire commissioner.
It seemed like a good thing to do.
Sal Cassano is here. Commissioner, nice to meet you.
Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much for coming. Of course, changing these batteries is the difference between life and death.
That is correct. We always tell you smoke alarm is the first sentinel to notify people that there is a fire in their home.
And, yeah, how many times do we read the headlines in the newspaper, and one of the first thing that's reported is no battery in the smoke alarm, right, or no smoke alarm? Right.
That's correct. We have about 70% to 75% of deaths in residentials will not have a working smoke detector or one with batteries in it. And, you know, that's just a tragedy because we have... Early warning is the lifeblood of us, and you know, we have an event this morning at 11 o'clock where we have at a firehouse in Harlem where a working smoke detector alerted the neighbors, and you know, they reported the fire. The firefighters got there very quickly, were able to rescue the fella, and he's alive today because of that smoke alarm.
Now, there was a program to give away batteries.
Aha. I'm glad you asked that. Well, Duracell is going to be at Engine 69, Ladder 28. With the commissioner later today in Harlem. That's the one in Harlem he's talking about. And there's two locations in every borough for free batteries. Call 311 for time and location. But there's no excuse. This just saves your life. It can also save other lives in your apartment, house, or other apartments in the building or the house next door because fires spread. But, you know, in the end, I think Sal would tell you, short of great leadership in the fire department, he'd have to put that first. All kidding aside, well-trained and well-managed people and all the resources. But the firefighter's friend, more than anything else, is time. The earlier they get a notice, the earlier they can get there, the better their chance of putting out the fire and saving lives.
And it seems to me, Sal, you've been in the fire department literally forever, I think.
40 years.
Yeah, exactly. So it seems that there are less and less fires in commercial buildings because of code, correct?
That's correct.
But in houses, we still have the problem.
The overwhelming majority of our deaths are in residential buildings. And as the mayor said, we're going to be out there today giving out over about 75,000 batteries that Duracell donated to the department. And not only do we give them out, we put them in an envelope like this, John, and it gives you fire safety tips. Not only are we giving you a battery, when you before you open it, you read it on this envelope, and it tells you other things to do, like have an escape plan, make sure you don't overload outlets. So it's not only we give out those batteries today, but we try to instill on people how to be safer. And because of that, you know, last year we've had the lowest fire deaths in recorded history in 90 years, 73. But as we say, 73 is 73 too many.
Yeah, but keep in mind, it's 73 on the population that's double what it was 90 years ago. So it's a lot more impressive. This is not a rate that's lower. This is an absolute number that's lower.
All right, I have to ask you, there are reports that the ranks are going to be thinned in the fire department.
Well, we're going to have to do more with less throughout the entire city in every single agency. And we, you know, our job is to make this city safer, cleaner, more friendly to business. That's the thing. Not to spend as much money as we can. So people say, oh, I want more of every kind of municipal employee. But that's not our job to build the biggest employment. It's to do the best job. And the fire department, with less resources, like the police department and every other agency, keeps doing more with less. So deaths are from murders are down, and crime is down, and fire deaths are down, and traffic deaths are down. And, you know, all of these things, health department with fewer people has got more public health initiatives going. And we've got to find intelligent ways to save money. One of the ways, for example, for the fire department is to get rid of these fire alarm boxes that are available. Vintage from so long ago. Today, everybody has a cell phone. In the world, there are 6 billion people. In the world, there are 5 billion cell phones.
It's an extraordinary number.
In Africa, every second person in the whole continent has a cell phone.
Now, I was reading about these alarm boxes. They cost you in the fire department, Commissioner, millions of dollars.
About $6 million a year, John. And you know, the sad part about it is, over 97% of the alarms transmitted are from other than alarm boxes. That means phone alarms, alarms like you said in the building. And 85% of those are false alarms, which really taxes our resources.
85% of the fire boxes,
yeah.
The boxes.
The poles.
False alarms.
Right.
And, you know,
what percentage of the, when you call in, is a false alarm? Very low, I assume.
Very low. Very low, yeah.
Yeah, partially because
you can be traced.
Exactly right. Whereas the box sits there, the kid walks up, thinks it's cute, pulls the alarm. But, you know, it may be cute, but what do you do if you put in a false alarm and the fire engine or ladder rushing on its way to ostensibly save a life, not knowing that it's a false alarm? What happens if it hits a kid and kills him?
Yeah.
How could you know? So false alarms, they're expensive. They
so
cost
has
you
that
money,
decision been made
really,
to yank the boxes?
I think we need to have the city council approve it.
We need city council approval, but we also need to go back to court where it was litigated and make our case to the judge. But I really think we have a very good case with the statistics. The technology is outdated. And, you know, we live in the 20th century. Most other cities have done away with alarm boxes a long time ago.
Let me ask you about the reduction in staff numbers. What's that going to do to your training program? How is that going to be affected, the school, fire school?
No, we haven't had a class because of budget,
right.
You know, but we will get down to a certain headcount where we will have to have another class. We can't do that until we see exactly where we are in the budget process. So it just doesn't make sense to have a class until we know where we are.
Sure, no,
our whole budget is tied up waiting to see what happens in Albany, which
Albany,
we can
right.
talk about later on.
Right.
But because Albany, we know we have put a proposed budget, which we did in January, that is balanced. It makes the fire department find ways to spend less. That's Sal's job, to do more with less. Same thing for Ray Kelly in police and John Daugherty in sanitation, and go right down the list. But and one of the things he says, look, if we cut out these fireboxes, I'll save $6 million. It's $6 million that I don't have to take out of a firehouse or an engine or a ladder or men or training or any of the other things. And this $6 million, Sal, who's been there for 40 years, says is a waste. And he'd rather spend $6 million
gotcha.
On something else. And I might point out, I think I mentioned this when we appointed you, another one of the commissioners that has served every rank from the bottom to the top.
That's correct.
Peter, Kelly, Daugherty, Benepe, there might be one or two others, I think.
That's great, because then, of course, you know what's going on all the way down the line.
You've been there and done it.
Been there, done that. Started as a probie in 1969, and Blessedly, I'm the commissioner in 2010.
Good for you.
Now, how would you like, you're in your house, there's a fire, somebody's coming through the door to save your life. Would you want this guy?
I'd want him the first one through the
door. He had a lot more hair when he was I saw a picture of him when he was a probie or something with sideburns and a lot of hair, which I hate to say
I've seen pictures of you when you were
all
a probie, too.
All of us were like, I said to him, if I'd known you look like that, I might not have appointed you.
Commissioner, nice to meet you. Thank you for coming. Mr. Mayor, hang on a second. Let me take a break. We're coming right back. And, of course, your questions at the end of things at 800-321-0710. This portion of the program brought to you by... John Gamble, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 23 minutes now after 8 o'clock. Again, 800-321-0710. I've got a question for the mayor before we finish up here. First of all, Monday night, I was the MC at the Broadcasters Foundation.
You did a brilliant job.
Thank you very much.
People were talking about that. They said you should go into radio.
I made some comment about twittering, and the mayor, in his speech, stood up and said, let me assure you, ladies and gentlemen, John Gambling has no clue about twittering, which was the truth.
Well, absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I just thought I'd point that out. I knew you'd be appreciative.
Yes, thank you very much.
I did get a good laugh, though.
Yeah, I did.
And nobody protested.
In fact, there was a number of good laughs in there. Who's your speechwriter?
it was very nice, and thank you for the award.
$657 million settlement with the World Trade Center workers.
Yes.
Are you happy with this?
Well, it still has to be approved by the judge. But
and by the litigants,
yes.
The class action.
This is the federal money that went into the so-called insurance company after 9/11, which people have been screaming, spend it, give out. The trouble is there's so many people and so much of the damage to people that was done by working down there isn't evident until many years later. If you right away, we would have given away all the money and been out of money. So you wait a reasonable time, you work with everybody, and assuming the judge approves this, and then 95% of those who claim they were hurt and can prove it, approve it, then it takes the federal money, $630 million of it, and based on how much your lungs are damaged, body, whatever, it's distributed from small amounts to big amounts. And I think it's a good settlement for everybody, but I must caution, it has to be approved by the judge. But this takes care of civilians and uniformed service members. It takes care of the private contractors who were brought in, the men who were hired to work down there. So there's an enormous, I think it's fair and reasonable given the circumstances. And we've been working on this for a long time.
If there are those that don't think that this is fair, are there other avenues, or is this the end of the road?
They would have to prove that the city was negligent, which would probably be hard to prove. I think in all fairness to those, you know, there was this something that we'd never experienced before, and everybody from top to bottom, federal government, state government, city government, they all tried to do what was right. The private contractors came in, people volunteered their time, and they can they did get, and there's no argument that people got
affected
by it, yeah. And we have built into this is also some money left so that if you don't have cancer now but you do come down with it in the future or other things,
that's one of my questions.
And it looks back and it looks like it was caused by there is money left over for doing that. And we had to do that. And one of the great fears we always had is if you didn't do this and all the contractors were held responsible, some of them would have gone bankrupt, which not good for the jobs or whatever. But also, who would go in the next time? You know, if there's another disaster, you want people. It's like the Good Samaritan law is designed so that you don't get scared off when somebody needs you. You rush in, help them, and the law is smart enough to say, well, you know, under those circumstances, you can't take some kinds of precautions. You can't know things in advance. You want people to be willing to come to others' aids and not to be held held accountable. And this is the $1 billion insurance fund that the federal government put up with it, and all the first responders and the workers will get compensated. Some people won't be happy with it. But given the magnitude of the problem and the different interests, I think it's a fair and reasonable compromise.
All right. You've been very vocal the last couple of weeks, actually longer than that, but the last couple of weeks especially over this deadline, which is today on the World Trade Center, of coming to some sort of conclusion between PA Larry Silverstein and others. Are we there today?
We
from what you know?
Through the night. And we are not there yet, but I think it's probably fair to say the gap seems to be narrowing. Look, everybody is a little bit to blame in this. We all back on 9/11 said, we're not going to let the terrorists beat us today. There's a different economy. And we say, I don't want to put money in. And the bottom line is we cannot have a hole in the ground. You just, can you imagine 10 years from now, and if you don't do it now, 10 years from now, there will be this hole in the ground. People from around the world are going to come. They're going to come to the memorial, which is on budget, on schedule, get done. And the Freedom Tower is going up. And they'll say, what's this big hole? 20 years later, New York, America couldn't build. And some of the editorial writers keep saying, well, it's not the right plan. Wait. It's never the right plan. There's never the right time. If there was ever a time, I think, to build some office buildings downtown, you couldn't have a better time than now. There hasn't been anything built in a while. It takes 4 or 5 years to build these buildings, by which time the economy hopefully be a heck of a lot better, but it'd certainly be different than today. Today, you can sign contracts to buy steel and cement and labor a lot cheaper than you could in the boom times. In the boom times is not the time to go in and build these things. And if you go back and you look at the big things that were done in the city, whether it's the Empire State Building or the subways or the Central Park, they're all done when these self-styled experts would say, oh, it's not the right time, the market isn't there, this, that. They find a million
excuses. The tunnels,
excuses.
The bridges were all built right after the Depression.
That's the time to do it. If you're a developer, you build now so that when the market improves, you got something to sell. Not, you don't wait till you have something to demand and then say, oh, I better go get something done. By the time you get it done, the economy will have turned back down because these things are always cyclical.
So the argument that the PA has been making is we're not going to finance a building that on spec.
All buildings that get done, not all, that's not fair. In bull market times, you don't build buildings on spec. In bear market times, you do. In bull market times, when you build them with tenants, you better hope those tenants' leases are good. And that's what happened to a lot of developers. Those leases weren't good. This is, I suppose you could argue it's spec. But let me tell you what the speculation is. The speculation is that America is going to survive. The speculation is that New York is going to be the greatest city in the world. The speculation is that people are going to come from around the world to a place where we have a symbol of what happens when you forget that freedom is fragile. That's the speculation, not on the buildings are going to fill up. This is New York City, and we haven't built any big new buildings in a long time. There's a handful going up. It's like somebody said to me the other day, there's 9,000 apartments available. Yeah, out of 3 million. New York and America, we're supposed to look to the future and lead. The glass is more than half full, and there's always naysayers. But that's just what happens. I love it. Yesterday, I was there breaking ground Atlantic Yards. You think about this. Brooklyn would be the second or third largest city in the country if it was a city by itself, maybe third. Chicago might be, but up there. The Atlantic Yards have more subways and trains coming into it than Penn Station, where Madison Square Garden is. You've got a sports-crazy borough, but no professional sports. You've got a market for shows and circuses and things like that. That it's right there. They don't have to come from any place. You got all of Long Island, Nassau and Suffolk County that can get there a heck of a lot easier than they can get to the west side of Manhattan. And there are people, and we need jobs, and it's a blighted area that's been there for a long time. And you know, there's some people who still say, oh, no, it's the wrong thing. Build, don't destroy, and that sort of thing. Come on. This was one of the great things. This isn't a good example. And in all fairness to Bruce Ratner, who's fought this for 7 years, and the people that have delayed him made it so much more difficult and so much more expensive. And he's not building as big or as fast as he would have if we'd let him go ahead then. But there's a guy. I mean, to signal out just him, because the governor, this governor and the previous governors were helpful. And Marty Markowitz worked on this thing. He deserves a lot of credit for this. But in our administration. And there's lots of other people that helped contribute. But those are the people that have a vision for the future and are building for the future. And, you know, the naysayers, there's never a good time.
Do you know the name of the Nets? We were trying to come to a definitive name that has been chosen. Will they be the Brooklyn Nets? Will they be the New York Nets? Or will they be the New Jersey Nets?
Certainly, I guarantee you, not the latter, okay? See, I'll leave the other things
we'll
to
see
you.
If Stu can come up with an answer to that one for us. 832-800-321-0710. If you've got a question, we've got a line or two open, 800-321-0710. You got to get through Mike Figliola to get on with your questions, so give him a holler right now. Here comes Joe Bartlett with news. All right. Thank you, Bill Rock, for that. 21 before 9 o'clock. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. I've got, two figs. What do we got? Two lines open, I guess. 800-321-0710. State budget problems. What do we do? Richard Ravitch comes up. Borrow the money and come up with a financial council, well, Ravitch, a la 1970.
Whether you
New
like
York
Ravitch's
City.
Plan or not, at least it's a plan.
It is a plan.
Yeah. I mean, and in all fairness, the governor, he had a plan, too. I mean, you know, they'll have to work out something. Ravitz's plan basically is reform the system so you go to real gap accounting, because the kind of accounting they use in the state, cash accounting, they just withhold a check. They withhold your refunds for taxes if you do one, and they say, oh, well, we didn't spend that money. They have the obligation. That's the fundamental difference between cash basis accounting and accrual basis accounting. They owe you the money on an accrual basis, but it doesn't count on a cash basis if you don't send out the checks. And it's really just it's another ways to play games. And there's a whole bunch of other things that Dick has proposed, all of which I think, almost every one of them, is a great idea. And in return, he said they should have the ability to borrow part of the $9 billion deficit. They'd still have to reduce expenses, I think $7 billion in cuts and $2 billion in borrowing, no new taxes. But one of the conditions for the borrowing would be that all of these reforms are made. It is very hard to make those reforms because it's really hard for a legislature to obligate future legislators to something. So, and that's always been a problem with taxes. Now, you can borrow money for 30 years and have an obligation that goes on, although there are there's an organization, a structure called LGAC, where you basically take sales tax revenues and you hold them aside to make sure you pay going down the road. When the state promises the city money every year, it has not turned out that way. The next governor comes in and says, you know, I didn't make that commitment, or we won't pay you this year, we'll pay you next year. That's what's happened to us with the state year in and year out, which is why I'm so skeptical that they can do it. But if Dick can get them to do these things, I think it is a good idea. I'm not in favor particularly of borrowing anything. That was what we did in the 70s, although Dick makes the good point that there is such a large deficit that, in a practical sense, they've got us into this situation, which you and I are guilty as much as anybody else, because we haven't called up and screamed enough to get them to stop these practices. They've been spending money that we didn't have. They've been using one-shot accounting gimmicks, which are just bad fiscal policy. They have been selling capital assets and sticking the money, using the money for operating. You can see what they've been doing to the MTA. They've walked away from solutions to a lot of problems that might have left us in better situation. So, you know, I'm skeptical a little bit, although I will go up and I will help Dick Ravitz if he needs help and testify. I think these things are good ideas. But the danger is that you borrow rather than cut more. And yeah, that you borrow without having the reforms.
Doesn't it just feed the addict?
Well, that's the argument. In the 70s, that's exactly what we did. And we took three decades to get out of the problems of the 70s because we did that when you borrow money. Now, the Post read an editorial today that said, oh, well, you know, we did the same thing. Yeah, we came in after 9/11. And the economy was reeling.
Talking about the Bloomberg administration.
Yeah, and the state had authorized, I think it was $2.5 billion in emergency borrowing. The Giuliani administration used $1 billion of it. We used the other $1.5 billion. We had $500 million a year due for 5 years to finish paying off the Big Mac bonds. We got the state to take over that, although what they did is rather than pay it, they then financed it for 30 years. That was changing the obligation from the city to the state given the city was much more badly hurt by 9/11 than the state was. I don't happen to think that was a terrible idea. I think it was good for the city and probably good for the state, because the city just, we would have had to cut more things. And since we're the economic engine, I view that as an investment by the state in the city. What they did, of instead of taking $500 million a year for 5 years, instead they just sold bonds for 30 years so that they wouldn't have to take the accounting hit or the come up with the cash right now. That, to me, was the thing that didn't make any sense, but that's the way they wanted to do it. And I was glad to get the money for the city.
I know you've been angry about, what is it called, city time? What is city time, and why has it cost us hundreds of millions of dollars?
City time is a system that was started, a computer system started in 1995, which is, believe it or not, almost done. John, you can laugh, but I don't think you could or anybody else. These projects, whether it is air traffic control system is another one, they are so big, you cannot build easily big accounting systems and software projects that covers so many things. Do you know, there's thousands of pay grades. Every single one, every single pay grade, job title in the city has a different structure. It is an enormous thing. It probably could have been done better. Maybe it could. I wasn't there. You weren't there.
No.
But there's nobody that's ever done projects this big easily. Having said that, we do need a ways to know. You complain all the time that we're wasting money. Okay, we've got to know who should get paid, when they come in, when they leave, what they pay them the right amount. That's a software system that you got to build. They are building it. We already have 50,000 out of the 300,000 employees in the city on the system. And in the next year, since we've now got almost every agency, if not all of them, have some part of that working already. The next thing is really the software is almost done. It's just implementing, and now's not the time to run away from this. It'll still cost us, I don't know, $150, $200 million. But it's, in the grand scheme of things, this will save an enormous amount. And some of the people, the criticisms you hear, it has biometrics, for example. When you walk in, the old days, you walked in, you filled in your timesheet. Now you just stick your hand down on a machine and it knows. That's the way every private company or private sector company is starting to do that. You just have to get into the 21st century. I know it's painful, and I think it probably could have been done a lot better, and I wish I'd focused on it more, but I don't know that it could have made that much difference. All I can tell you is it's almost done. It's a year to go. We would walk away from $500 million expense, and then we'd have to start from scratch. So you think now, 10 years from now, you'll be doing it. At least here, a year from now, we'll be done. And if it's 13 months rather than 12 months from now, we are at least, people are using it every day. So those that say it'll never work, that's just total bull. There's 50,000 people using it already.
All right. Share a ride cab. What are you being told about its success and or not?
I don't know. I mean, the first day was slow, but so what? I mean, you know, you look at it a year from now.
We have a new TLC commissioner.
We have a new TLC commissioner. Well, we don't yet. Matt Dawes was the TLC commissioner. He served 2 7-year terms, said enough, no mas. He did a great job as TLC chair, but he said, 14 years of service, you know, come on, thank you. And we are going to send the nomination of former city councilman David Yaski over to the city council for approval for a new seven-year term as chairman commissioner of the TLC. There are 9 members of the commission, all of whom are appointed by the mayor, but they have to be approved by the city council. And Yaski's the right guy, I think, because if you remember, he led the way in introducing hybrid taxis to the city. That was part of Plan YC. He was chairman of the Small Business Committee, so he's familiar with the issues and concerns of running a small business. And a lot of taxi drivers are small businesses. One person, one asset, but they make a living. Released a report a year ago on how certain medallion owners and brokers were circumventing lease cap prices. And we're working, and he's the right guy. We need somebody to make sure there's no fraud. As you saw the other day, there is some of the drivers were setting their meters to out of town. There's a switch. You just throw it, and you pay more at a higher rate if you're out of the city. Well, somebody in back seat doesn't notice this. How do we know? Because now we have, thanks to Matt Dawes, GPS in a reporting device in every cab, so we can look and see from here to there, and what they charged. And it's so obvious; it's double what it should be. And so now we're going back, and you know, some of these people could face serious charges. Now, how we could ever recoup the money and get it back to the individual payers, no, but we could stop the practice, and we can make sure there's penalties. Anyways, Yeski, I think, will be a good choice. And, you know, that the TLC regulates something like, I think it's like 50,000 vehicles. There's 13,000 yellow cabs and 100,000 drivers and 900 businesses. And there's black cars and yellow cars and liveries and limousines and paratransit and commuter vans. And, you know, they transport 1 million passengers a day in all of these. So it's a big deal, and it's a big job, and I think he'll do very well. And I hope he'll be approved by the city council. I expect so.
All right. We've got just some folks that would like to ask you some questions, and we will get to them in just a moment. Let me see here. One line is open. Boy, I tell you, Mike is really putting the thumb down today. 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Your questions are next here at WOR. All right, Mr. Mayor, we got a bunch of folks that want to ask you a question. Let us get right to it. Line number two is where we start. This is Phil. Phil, good morning. You've got the mayor. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mayor.
Hi.
Listen, I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Two things. One is there any way to reduce the pension obligation over time, even incrementally? It would be fantastic if maybe we could reduce it 20% over the next 30 or 40 years. And secondly, the assessments for homes on market value, everybody's home value is down, even though things seem to have stabilized.
Let me tell you quickly. Pensions, the state constitution prohibits even the state from taking away pensions that they grant. So it was very clever, put in by some lawyer many years ago. So you can't do anything about the pensions of people who work for the city today. And in all fairness, you made a deal. So I don't have a big problem in honoring those commitments. What we need is what's called a Tier 5, which would, for new employees of the city, have them at a less generous pension system that more mirrors what you can get in the private sector, what the taxpayers get. And that's been difficult political lift. The unions don't want to do it. The legislature's afraid of the unions. But that's the solution to that. In terms of property taxes, the law is that the property taxes follow the assessments, but they can't go up more than X a year and Y every 5 years. So on the way up, your property taxes were lower than they would have been if a strict assessment. On the way down, they're higher. Eventually, they catch up, and they're starting to catch up. So in the next few years, properties probably will go back up, or somewhat. I think the end of the decline is here, but who knows. But in any case, property taxes should, at the rate, go down a little bit and stop.
All right, Phil, thank you very much. Line number six, we're going to Eileen. Hello, Eileen. You've got the mayor. It's your turn.
Hi.
Thank you, John. Good morning, Mayor. Mayor, if they made you guardian angel mayor of Haiti, I was wondering if you could you plan something that would help to improve it that we could leave, like housing, water, electric.
Eileen, it is the saddest place I've ever been. I was there in probably 2004. The infrastructure was horrendous, is a nice way to phrase it. And then after this calamity, it is so much worse. The hospitals were nothing we would ever put up with. You couldn't possibly do it. And sadly, there are an awful lot of great doctors out of Haiti, and a lot of them have moved here. We have a lot of Haitian doctors in our city hospitals, which I'm glad about, but it means they don't have the doctors down there. They don't have the infrastructure, and they don't have the government to pull it together. They've always had this, the old government, new government. They fight. There's a lot of terrorism. The old government tries to keep the new government in. They change governments with monotonous regularity. It is a very sad place, and the world has to find some ways to take care of it, but it's going to take a lot of money, and it is, even today, the schools haven't reopened, and there's no shelter for a lot of people, and there's the diseases that I thought were eradicated in the world, they have them all. Haiti really needs all of us.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thank you. Eileen, thank you very much. Let us go to Keith. Keith, you've got the mayor. What's your question?
Hi.
Mr. Mayor, good morning. It's an honor to speak with you. I wanted to see what your opinion was on this proposal by a city councilman to ban the use of salt.
Okay, I think it's ridiculous. What we're trying to do, we want to do what they did in England, get voluntarily the packaged good manufacturers to over 5 years slowly reduce the salt content so that people's palate change. And that would save 90-odd thousand lives. But you have to have salt when you cook. I mean, the bottom line is, number one, people might like the taste. I do. I use too much salt already myself. But also, it makes a lot of foods, the way you cook them and bake them, salt is a real ingredient. And so I don't think that's the right thing to do. Also, keep in mind, most of the salt you get comes in packaged goods. 10 spoonfuls of sugar in every full sugar soft drink. 10 spoonfuls. You put 10 spoonfuls of sugar in your coffee, you couldn't drink it. But that's why kids are obese. That's something we should...
You're for the soda tax.
100%. If you're against it, you really are against the kids, because there's no question, and we've seen it with cigarettes, you raise the price, kids use less. And somebody said, oh, it's great. You don't have to do this because consumption is down in the schools. Yeah, because in the schools we banned full sugar drinks. They bring them in occasionally, but fundamentally, but they still drink an enormous amount outside. And I would rather get the $1 billion in revenue that it would raise and use it for our schools and Medicare and helping people. But it would also, the biggest single public health issue in this country that is growing rather than declining is obesity, and it's mainly among kids.
All right. So you don't think the banning of salt exclusively from...
No.
I
don't even think you should ban smoking. You want to smoke? I think you're crazy, but I think you should have a right to smoke. What you shouldn't be able to do is to smoke where somebody else doesn't have a choice but to breathe the air that you're polluting.
All right. Mr. Mayor, that's going to be it for us, at least for this week. We'll regroup next Friday.
Looking
have yourself
forward
a good
to
week. You're going to be marching on Wednesday?
I'm going to be marching on Wednesday. Be careful. A lot of flooding this weekend, and just pay attention.
Wear your boots and bring them
over. Wear your boots.
All right, Mr. Mayor, have a good week. That's going to do it for me as well. For everybody here on the John Gambling Show, we thank you very much. Next week is March Madness Week. We'll get you involved with that as well. Have yourselves a great weekend, and as the mayor suggested, stay as dry as possible. Coming up, it is 9 o'clock.